This is an EAA Radio News Update.
I'm Farid Gio. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner, the world's first mostly composite commercial airliner, flew for the first time on December 15th from Payne Field's runway 34 left in Everett, Washington. Boeing chief pilot and EAA member Michael Carriker, along with engineering test pilot Randy Neville, were at the controls. Mike Carriker has been a pilot for Boeing for 20 years and joined the Dreamliner program in 2001. He was pilot in command for the first flights of the 737-600 and 900, but has longed to make a first flight in an airplane that he has built himself, especially if it's on floats. Carriker talked with us about the 787 Dreamliner, test flying, and EAA.
You've been a long-time EAA member. How long have you been in the organization?
Honestly, I can't remember the first year I joined. It must have been in the mid-1990s.
What brought you into the organization in the first place?
I had my private pilot's license long before I went into the military and long before I worked for Boeing. I had always had an idea that I wanted to build my own airplane. And to build your own airplane, you need some help. And joining EAA and you go into air shows, especially like the local one here at Arlington, you know, you saw all these people that could do all these things, do the welding and do the covering of the material. I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to make my own airplane, I'm going to need some assistance. And that's where you get it from, EAA.
Describe what is your passion for aviation.
I love why airplanes fly, the technical reasons why airplanes fly. Obviously, when you get into bigger airplanes and you get into flight control laws and stability and highly augmented flight control systems, the task gets more and more entertaining. I just enjoy the technical aspect. And then, like yesterday, when you take a brand new airplane flying and you end up over the Olympic Mountains with brand new snow and blue skies, and you get this picture framed out in front of you in this airplane that you and your team have worked so hard to develop and to produce, it's just a great reward.
Well, we'll talk about your work at Boeing in just a minute, but do you fly anything smaller?
I do. Well, I rent local airplanes. I rent a 172, and I do the local Boy Scout aviation merit badge. And so that's twice a year I go do that. I got to fly a Beaver on floats this past fall. So I went out and got Kurt in the float plane, three landings. That was good. I also fly another friend's Cessna 180 on floats. And then I fly a 152 aerobat to do some acrobatics. Some of the kids like to do acrobatics. Some of them don't, but it's all good fun.
Tell us your aircraft building story.
I wanted to have an airplane on floats, and I wanted to build it. I wanted to produce it, and I really wanted to do it for all the same reasons. I think a lot of people build the airplanes. You get to be the owner, maintainer, and you know how it's built. And it was just a good project, and I still build things today. I wanted a high-wing airplane, and I wanted, because I wanted to put it on floats. And so I ended up on a Kit Fox 5, and I had it for quite a few years. I got all the wing built and got all the fuselage built and got all the controls run. And then the workload on the 787 just kept going up and up and up, and I moved. I changed my job location to another spot, and I packed up and moved out of my nice three-car garage to a not much of a facility, had it at the airport. And a gentleman came along and offered me a good price to take it. So now I'm on a bit of a hiatus. When we get the 787 certified and do it, I'll take another look at this. I've always liked hats, biplanes. Last time I was at AirVenture, every time I went to get a Coke or just walk around, for some reason I always walk by the hats biplane. So that's it. Tough to put a hats on floats, though. So I have to make a big decision.
Well, you've flown into the AirVenture before. What airplanes have you brought there?
I brought the Boeing 247, which was an airliner delivered to United Airlines in 1933. Brought it once. And then we got to bring the Boeing 307 twice. We got to park the 307 on Aeroshell Square. And they're just such a fantastic days. I mean, just people coming by, and they just want to talk about airplanes. And it was such a great pleasure to stand out and talk about the airplane and tell people how it flies and things like that. We got to fly the 247 in the contractor showcase. That was a great treat.
Yeah, what does that feel like to fly in the showcase?
It's just great excitement, and you just see all those people, and first thing, obviously, is, and EA always gets us into your mind, is just do this thing safely first, do it safely second, and then the third thing is safety. And so, you know, you take off, and you make your time, and you come in. The 247, it wasn't too exciting. You could come by gear down, and you could come by gear up, and that was about the extent of the performance. But just to come by and look at all those people and go, holy smokes, look at all those people who just love airplanes.
What other classic Boeing airplanes have you flown?
I've got to fly the Museum of Flight's B-17G, the last, I believe to be the last Boeing-built B-17 in existence. And then I got to fly Evergreen's B-17F in preparation for flying the Museum of Flight's B-17G.
Your testing career at Boeing is extensive with first flights and several late model 737s, as well as participating in the Joint Strike Fighter test program. How often do you fly when you're working on a certification program like the 787?
Now, the 787 it'll be three flights a week, probably 15 hours a week. So I get 50 hours a month in a flight test program. You're working pretty hard because there isn't any straight and level flying on a flight test program. It's pretty tough, and you got a bunch of engineers in the back of the airplane watching you at about 100 hertz. So I noticed somebody come in on a first takeoff that they said, "Why did you take off with the wing down?" And I thought, "Well, I didn't take off the wing down." Said, "Yeah, you had a half a degree wing down, left wing down on takeoff." And I go, "Must have needed it for the wind or something."
It's interesting you talk about some of the telemetry that is monitored on a test flight. How has test flying changed from when you first got into it, as far as certainly the data available and then what is tested and how it's tested?
It's always incumbent upon the airplane flies because the pilot flies it, and we drive everything to making the airplane fly acceptable to the pilot. And of course, those are defined. We certify the airplane to FAR Part 25 standards. But at the end of the day, it's still, does the pilot like to fly the airplane? All the same things that you do when you fly a Cub or a Cessna 150. Is there control harmony? Does the aft pull and the left wheel roll seem to be okay? We coordinate the turn with the rudder. But does that feel like it's natural? So, you know, in an airplane, we have to stand on the rudder pedal to get the nose to come around. Of course, we do that internally in the airplane. And is that the right? Does that feel right? Does it feel like the nose comes around as the wings roll over? Do you get a? And we have a technical measurement term for it. And then we produce it because that's how an airplane should fly.
You've been flying the 787 long before its first actual flight. Do you feel like you know the airplane already inside and out?
Well, we know the simulation inside and out. That's for sure. I had more than on my test team. There's four of us on my project pilot test team. And we probably flew the simulation between all four of us about 6,000 hours doing various things. What we really do in a simulation is we make sure the airplane's going to work in its normal mode. Then we spend the vast majority of the time looking at when things break. And then right after you get it to work, you start breaking things and saying, if this breaks, what do you do? If this breaks, what do you do? And that's how we sign the airplane ready to safe to fly.
How does it fly?
Obviously, I think it flies great. I helped design it, so I thought it flew great. It took off right on the scheduled, you know, all our scheduled events. We matched the data. We matched our predicted data just right down the right hundreds of parameters. We had a big data review the other day with all the flight controls and stability control engineers, and we're just spot on our predictions, which is really, really good because they come from wind tunnel models and computational fluid dynamics. And simulation building. And so we're really happy. Now we can go back and do very, very, very few tweaks of our simulation. And then we can predict the future and we can go out and start clearing the airplane out to its V-dive and M-dive speeds and all the way down to stalls.
You participated in several first flights, mostly on the late model 737s. Is there anything that you say at the end of the runway before you push the throttles forward, or you know, any good luck saying or anything else like that, or you have a statuette on the instrument panel?
No, we're talking to a whole bunch of people, and you're thinking, you know, if this is just like any other airplane, when you take off, you're always planning, right? If the engine stops here, I'm going to do this. If this stops there, or this happens there, I'm going to do this. And thinking about that, I just think I remember at when we call V1, which of course in a twin engine airplane is the takeoff safety decision speed. The airplane calls V1, and I said, we're going flying, and there's, you know, we're going this time. And it was a great thrill not to have to pull the throttles back and come to a stop and do all that kind of thing. So it took off right for all the plans that we'd always done.
What kind of buzz is in the Seattle area when a new airplane is making its first flight?
It must have been quite a big buzz because there were 25,000 people is how many watched the takeoff. And the website had more than 2 million hits so far.
Did you notice anything while you're up flying? Did you feel any different, like you were part of something really special?
I don't think until I landed. And then I had to go do a press conference that was very fun. Most people, you know, I didn't think after, if I had ever got to fly like a first flight in a Kit Fox, I wouldn't have 20 television news cameras looking at me. It was great fun. And I don't think it did until afterwards. And I kind of sat down, and Randy Neville, who flew with me, you know, we looked at each other. Yeah. we're still people. We're just still happy we got it there. You know, we got the airplane safely. We got all the test points. We conducted the test plan the way we had hoped to conduct the test plan. With the weather closed in on us, and we were done. We had all the things we wanted to do for anybody's regard on a successful first flight. We had planned an amazingly aggressive first flight plan, and we went way past the normal first flight envelope expansion, even in our condensed time. We went IFR 10 minutes after takeoff.
That must have been quite an accomplishment.
It was.
This one is a majority composite. What have you noticed about this particular test program that is different?
The material structure of the airplane maybe has a different frequency at which it vibrates, but we can predict those frequencies. That's what our structural dynamics folks do. They predict these frequencies, and then we know how to handle these natural frequencies at which the airplane vibrates at. And they're slightly different than a metal airplane would be, but every airplane has those characteristics. When you don't have these big, when you don't have rigid wings on an airplane, the 787 is the first time that we've built a commercial airplane transport that is fully fly-by-wire in all three axes.
That is a change for Boeing.
And we do it for various reasons, to make the airplane lighter and more efficient. Our big goal was to make it fly as good as a Boeing 777. I would tell you, being a Boeing pilot, that the Boeing 777 is the gold standard for good flying airplane, and all we had to do was match it. I don't know of any way to fly better than a 777.
If you look back on your whole experience with this program, what is the best accomplishment that you've seen so far as your participation?
It'd be hard to top the first flight. One of the most memorable things in the build-up for it is we were designing this flight control law in there, and it's a Boeing design flight control law, and we'd worked so hard in the simulation to get it to work, and we leased a 777 back from one of our customers, and we flew it about 250 hours developing the flight control laws step by step by step. We went to Cold Bay, Alaska, and in 200-300 foot overcast and a mile and blowing and 45 knots of crosswind, we turned the switches into the 777, and we put in our 787 flight control laws into the 777 airframe. We did 6 touch and goes and 45 knots of crosswind, and it worked. That to me was the big day, because we could just say, yep, our flight control system works.
And you've had the second flight of the 787 just the other day, and that was to reposition it.
Well, we want to, because we have 6 airplanes in the flight test program. The airplanes are assembled in Everett, Washington at the big facility there. And our flight test facility is at Boeing Field. And we do about as many hours of ground testing on the airplane as we do airborne testing. And the airplane is ready to fly. And so we took it off. We did some flying. Obviously, we had to do handling qualities and some flying qualities on the airplane to make sure it was okay. And then we landed back at Boeing Field, and now it's in the flight test inventory, and it's working on all the ground tests that are required for certification. And because we're really, our big goal now is to deliver it to our launch customer, All Nippon Airways, and we sure would like to have them have the airplanes by the end of the year.
When did you join the 787 program? What kind of input have the designers sought from you?
Well, I joined the program in April of 2001. So I've been working on it now for, 8+ years. I think from a flying quality standpoint and a flight deck design, you got to design the flight deck and all the displays and the interaction. It's like, if I want the weather radar, I want the button here, so to speak. It's not me. We have a team of 80 folks in our flight deck group who do an awful lot of hard work to get things together, and they make mock-ups. In the beginning, we had line drawings, and then some of our young engineers who are good with the computer made color drawings, and we literally put them on magnetic strips and put them on a magnetic board, scooted them around until we thought we had a design that we liked. And I sat in front of it, played like I was in an airplane, myself and my other project pilot at the time. And then about 6 months later, each one of those displays was being driven by a desktop computer. Then we stuck them all beside each other, and then we started bringing other pieces, and away we went.
What would you like people to know about the Dreamliner?
It'll be a great airplane for the passengers to ride in. I go through the technical specifications. It has a lower cabin altitude. It has more humidity on the inside. very big windows in it so you can see out. Really trying hard to make the joy of flying so that when you find an airplane, you look out, you see what's going by you, and you're in a very, very comfortable situation. You know, our customers are excited about having the airplane. They're excited about its efficiency, and they're excited about what we think the reliability of the service will be. The number three airplane has an interior. The interior is gorgeous. I think people get on the airplane and go, we all want to make an airplane that it's the preference of our customers to fly on, our customers' customers to fly on.
Mike, thanks very much for your time.
Well, you're very welcome.
This is EAA Radio.